You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. It's Wednesday, September 14th, 2022. And for the second week in a row, we're back in the studio at Roberta's Pizza. Heritage Radio Network was founded at Roberta's Pizza way back in 2009, and we're still going strong. So we're going to be doing more shows in studio as much as we can the next coming year. So we're going to go around the room today. I thought it'd be a great opportunity to talk to some of my favorite people in the beverage business, and they all happen to be in the Bushwick area of Brooklyn. So this is our Bushwick show with some of our all-stars. So let's go around the room, and they're going to introduce themselves, and we're going to have a great conversation about their beverage programs.
First of all, we should probably warm up the people that are out here looking in, because they're like, what the hell is happening in this room? Nobody's seen any action in here.
Who are you?
I'm just a dude, just a guy.
Dude that works at Roberta's.
Just a guy.
Brandon.
My name is Brandon Hoy. I'm the owner and co-founder of Roberta's. And really, I'm only saying this because this one guy's just like staring at me like, what the hell is this guy doing over here? They're like, what's going on in this room?
You're saying that like forever, the identity of Roberta's was this little radio network.
I'll tell you what, nobody, like, for so long there was so many shows that happened in this room constantly that I think people naturally, when they came in, they just expected to see people in here talking, because it was just what was happening all the time. And since COVID, there's been so few people in here that a lot of these people probably just moved here very recently, and they just thought it was a room where people stored
hard alcohol
and a boar's head, you know, and they were like, we don't know. It's just a weird room that we can see into. And now the guy's like, I don't know. There's people in there with headphones on. What are they doing?
Yeah, and they're like, why do we?
And he's just trying to enjoy his double IPA.
He really is. He really is.
Well, cool. Well, you're Brandon, and this guy.
I'm Jesse Ferguson from Interborough Spirits and Ales. Been super stoked to be back. Thank you for inviting me. As Brandon said earlier, this is definitely the fewest people that have ever been in this room, which is. It's kind of a nice way to get reintroduced to it. I look forward to future shows where we have the brolic 12
people.
I
appreciate you guys have a fond memory of Beer Sessions Radio.
Yeah. And
there's usually not enough microphones.
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's
exactly.
Like usually like three people sharing headphones and microphone, just being like, how do we get a word in here?
So we got hospitality, beer and spirits, and this guy.
So my name is Shinobu Kato from Kato Sake Works, and then I'm founder and brewer of the sake brewery in Bushwick. And the last time I was here was before the COVID, your 500th show?
3 years ago on the 500th episode of Beer Sessions Radio, yeah.
Yeah. And we're all neighbors, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, I rode my bike here from the brewery, and it was like less than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That's why I brought so much beer.
So tell me about the Bushwick thing. So, Brandon, you know, we might as well let people know what's going on out here. 2008, there was a woman I know. She was cooking at a pizza place called Roberta's in Bushwick, and no one had ever been there.
Yeah, and still, nobody's here. So who knows what's happened over those years. It was always cool. There was a lot already going on out here, and when we got out here, it just there needed to be more kind of like hospitality infrastructure for the people that were already here. It was this neighborhood was built on a lot of hardworking people. There's a lot of blue collar industry in this neighborhood, but there was also a lot of like artists. And what was happening at the time was the artists of the East Village were being outpriced, and Bushwick was our Williamsburg. This was an easy place to go, still on the L line, still brought you to all the places you wanted to be, but it was very cheap to live. And this was one of the few places where you could get like a 3,000 square foot loft in all of New York and just kind of live your greatest dream, whether you are, you know, building an art sculpture of 1,000 toilets, or a mini ramp, or you're starting your own small brewery label in the McKibben Lofts amongst the bed bugs.
Or McKibben Lofts is where Rooftop Films started.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot. Our Pilsner, which is called Bushburg, is a tribute to this neighborhood in that I was running a small rap record label in 2008 and had artists, and they lived in the buildings across the street when the waste management facility was still there. And they were like, people would ask them where they lived, and they would call it Bushburg. And, it was exactly that. It was three rappers who had a loft space, and it was where they could afford to live while they worked day jobs and tried to pursue their rapping dreams. You know,
it's funny, when we started this, like, this was not really Bushwick, and we used to call it the E-Whip, right? Which was because it was called the East Williamsburg Industrial Park. So when we first got here, we called it the E-Whip because it was like a no man's land between
Bushwick,
between East Williamsburg, which I feel like is like that Grand Graham area, right? East Williamsburg. And then there was this area, until you get to Flushing, you're technically not in Bushwick, right? Yep. Mm-hmm. This was a high industrial park, right? You got, Boar's Head, and it's
Frito-Lay,
and the Wonton Factory. Everything was just big industry. So when we first got here, we just called it the E-Whip. It was just a weird little pocket that, like, there was no street lights. There was rabid pack of dogs that roamed around. This was definitely the place you would go to leave your car if you stole it and you wanted to light it on fire. This place was the shit. Also, you could have like a fireworks extravaganza out here and nobody would come for days. 22 shots in the air, all the whole nine yards.
Brandon, I don't know, 12 years ago, I was here one night for a little party. It wasn't that long ago, but it was a long time ago. And you had above one of your buildings on the other end, I think Blanca's there now, you could walk up a ladder and there was a beehive. And I remember going up there with a couple people with drinks and nobody even knew we were up there. That was the old Bushwick, right?
That was the old Bushwick. I mean, I'm not saying that kind of stuff still doesn't exist. It just, a little bit more exposure here these days, you know? But it was wild. I mean, we had a motorcycle track in the backyard for a long time. I mean, the place was lawless, and it was crucial to what we were doing because, we were trying to push every angle and we were really trying to push everything that we were doing. So it was nice that there was no eyes on us, really, when it came to there was no law. So we could pretty much do whatever we wanted.
And Jesse, so you were out here too, but let's try to place your spot in Inverno. So
we are like technically right in. I mean, the reason why we call our Pilsner Bushburg is because I feel like by the time we opened, and we just celebrated our 6th anniversary, so we're 2016 founding. Thank you.
That's where Matt should have played the clap track. Yeah. he's slow on the sound.
The crowd goes wild.
He's slow on the sound.
I don't have the soundboard ready.
You're good, Brandon. Right, I like you on the show, man.
By the time we opened, I feel like Bushwick identity had been established so much around sort of this specific neighborhood and heading a little bit further east.
Some people have called it Robertasville.
Yeah, exactly. And so we sort of, my joke is always like, well, we are East Williamsburg because we're not hardcore Bushwick enough to claim Bushwick, because by the time we came around, the neighborhood had already become such an identity, right? Like it was suddenly, and it was, I think it was an authentic identity. It was a little bit, and you never know with the neighborhoods with real estate agents, right? Like who's driving what, but there was such a community drive in this specific neighborhood that I didn't want to come out and be like, well, we're in Bushwick, even though I think, we're, two long blocks east of Bushwick.
But you're still in the
East Whip. We are. 100%. 100%. We are literally in the East Williamsburg business.
Will you do a t-shirt?
Or industrial. And, we're like the north edge of, you know what I mean? And we deal with issues like they're trying, there's a lot of combat between our neighbors and bike lanes, right? Yeah. Like, because it's we're in a neighborhood where there's still a lot of true industry in trucks, and then they're putting there like what's also Grand Street, which is the most direct route to the Williamsburg Bridge, which is the most direct route for anybody who lives east of on the L train on a bicycle to get into the East Village. And you know, East Village still being like one of the like beating hearts of cultural New York City, right?
I'll tell you the problem in the center of that combat. We took away all their hookers and they're pissed because they're like, dude, we drive trucks for a living. You guys come in here, you clean up the streets. I can't dump my stolen car here anymore.
You put fancy beverages all over the place.
You put street lights everywhere. And like, you take away all the hookers. Now what are we supposed to do? Yeah. That's why they're mad at us.
There's a good answer to that, but I don't have it, Brandon.
I'm glad you don't.
Yeah. Well, in that case, Shinobu, you came in later. So let's get this whole picture of these great establishments that are about beverage and hospitality.
So I came to
E-Whip.
Yeah, I came to Bushwick 2016. So I'm new guy. Yeah.
It's the same as us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I moved to Brooklyn to start the business, and then I didn't know where to go. I checked a couple of neighborhoods, like, you know, Chinatown in Brooklyn, other places. And then I had a friend who lived in Bushwick for a long time. She's an artist. And she was like, okay, I can show you around the neighborhood called Bushwick. So we met at the Morgan stop. And the first thing I saw was a concrete factory with all the graffiti and then things. And then I was like, oh, I like this neighborhood. Yeah. And then that night, actually, we came here. Yeah. We waited for 2 hours to get the table at the
Romeo's. Makes me feel great.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, yeah. And then eventually I decided to move. And then now I have a business like 3 minutes.
I love that you were like, I love that neighborhood where I have to go and wait 2 hours to get food.
next to a cement factory
with graffiti everywhere. He's like, that's where I want to be. How many rats did you see that night, too?
Thanks for setting the tone, gentlemen. Let's make a toast. Well, for us, the beer, let's just go through the drinks, because one thing that's really cool, I didn't even think of it before, is the beer I've been drinking regularly when I come here is the Innerboro Roberta's Helles Lager.
The Mahala at your boy.
So, Jess, tell us about that beer and, you know, you could talk about the business side of it, but also just that beer itself.
Yeah, so the beer itself is...
It's like a killer... Helles Lager, man.
Thank you.
I'm on the second.
This is actually a very good, because he's going to tell you what the beer is, and I'm going to tell you like when we started talking about what we wanted out of a beer, how he got to it. So I like this reverse.
I mean,
and then we're going to talk about
it's our Innerboro iteration on a Helles, right? So it's slightly less hoppy than our pils. It's got a little more malt aroma and like nice honey kind of aroma from the malt alongside a real grassy, herbaceous, minty, noble hop aroma, which is definitely there. I mean, to style, it's probably like a little bit hoppy for an actual Helles, but this is America where everybody loves hops. So, you know, we hop up our Helles. But yeah, the idea was just to make the most, just super crushable beer that would go really well with pizza dough and cheese but have enough bitterness to cut through the grease and the fatty, you know, whether it's cheese or all the delicious meats that they're roasting up right here. You know?
Jesse, some words I hear now, like dry and crisp. To me, this beer is dry and crisp. Is this dry and crisp?
It finishes, I would say, right, just an inch to the right of bone dry. You know what I mean? Like, it's not quite bone dry.
It's got a little moisture to it.
It's got a little flabby. It's got a little flabbiness, right? Like, it is 100% wet, I would say.
Brandon, how do you go about making this like your house kind of beer style?
Okay, so you know, and you've been here for a long time. We pride ourselves on like loving craft beer, and we love beer. We're a beer place, but we also see what people buy, and we sell a lot of Budweiser, and we sell a lot of Modelo, and like the style of a Budweiser as a Helles, right, which is just a very easy drinking beer, made a lot of sense. But so we thought, like, what in our mind, what does a Budweiser lack? Well, it doesn't have enough flavor because it's trying to appeal to millions of people. How do we make a beer that's crushable, that people like, that could appeal to hundreds of people? We're only talking about, we're dealing with 400 or 500 people a night. That's who our clientele is. So in our mind, we were trying to find that beer that could compete against Budweiser in this place. And it could be easy drinking, very, very like just a beer that across all food platforms, it could pair well and nicely. There's not a food that it doesn't pair with. So you could pretty much put this with anything. And for a server to just be like, if somebody's like, I don't know what beer to drink, it's like, before you even get into what do you like what it is? It's just like, I got the one for you, yeah. You know? Just
yeah, somebody walks
your boy, you know?
If somebody walks in and they're like, yo, I want the double IPA, and then that's like, boom.
That's right. It.
They know what they want. But this is the beer for the people who are like, I want something cold, refreshing, and carbonated that is going to match anything that I'm eating.
Almost any time when somebody comes in and they don't know what they want, what kind of beer they want, like, you're probably going to lead them towards... So like a Kolsch, or you're going to lead them towards like a Pilsner or a Helles Lager. Usually those kind of beers are like, yeah, your safest bet with somebody who doesn't. Most beer drinkers, they know what they like.
It's
so
beer.
They come in, they're going to be like, I like a sour beer. I like a, yeah, a West Coast IPA, or I like a fruity IPA, you know?
Yeah, this is beer that tastes like beer. To like 99% of the people.
Which is what we were looking for. We wanted to make a beer that you could just literally write beer across it.
Yeah, that's the quote. And we're in the studio, and I wish someone was bringing me another picture of this right now. Well, and also when I walked in, yeah, when I walked in, and Brandon can do that. I love that. He puts his hand up. He gets beer in here. I think Brandon, every show we do in studio, you're joining us.
I will do every show. I mean, maybe not every show.
Jesse, you got the line. The beer that tastes like beer is kind of what people want. That's what I wanted. I want a good beer that tastes like beer. When we walked in too, you Brandon, you and Shinobu, we're talking about what beer to drink with sake and something about the rice. That was a great conversation.
One of the things we were getting at, though, is that there's this perception that sake is only like meant to be in Japanese restaurants, which I was like trying to bust that like theory, because I think there's like this idea, it comes in this little cup, yeah, and it's like hot or cold, and it's like it like, the fact of the matter is, like, we've as Americans have taken on so many different types of spirits through so many different cultures, yet like sake is not one that's just readily available.
It hasn't been 100% demystified.
Yeah, like, we call it sushi balier.
Yeah.
So it's hard to get out from the sushi restaurant.
Right.
Right, yeah.
Which is unfortunate. And he knows, we've had sake here at Roberta's forever since we've opened. We just, you know, when we had Blanca, we see some of the like similarities in Italian food as there are in Japanese food. And it's all just about craftsmanship. And this is a well-crafted spirit that's usually like somebody's thought about, and it's very thoughtful. And my question was, what beer pairs well with a shot of sake? And it's like, if you start looking at sake as a shot,
yeah, look at that. Brandon asked for beer and it comes into the studio. I love this one. Well, then,
the benefits of having me on the show.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Be more drunk.
Yeah. 3 years ago, you're on our 500th episode. You were just opening your little tiny sake place. We're not going to get into the little details of sake making, but just tell us how it's been. It's been 3 years now. You're expanding.
Yeah, so that was right before the pandemic. You know, we were about to open, and we had like a grand opening schedule and everything. Jimmy, you came by when we are still building the counter or something like that. And then we had like 3 days of like a family and friends, and we had to shut it down.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. Oh, we all know that, right? Yeah, but it was lucky probably because Bushwick is very like local oriented community. So people are like, okay, we've been seeing you opening, and we are so sorry that this happened, but we are here. Give me like 3 bottles of sake. Oh, by the way, we're gonna tip you like 25%. You know, that happened for the past 2 years, and then thanks to all the local people, we are still surviving and making sake, and then now we need a bigger space, so we are moving silk.
So wait, so let's go back. So just tell us, pick up your bottle and tell us what this sake is. And so you're saying when you opened in the pandemic, you were able to just, you stood there and people came up and you sold bottles out of your window. What did you do?
Yeah, that's what exactly we did. So we didn't use that counter that you came by, and then nobody has, you know, except
I was the only person that ever got to drink sake at his counter, Brandon.
Yeah. But this is an unpasteurized sake that we brewed, and then, you know, Roberta had this before. Yeah. So hopefully we will have more at the Roberta soon.
I'll tell you what, though. This is a great story about, like, probably all three of our success. This community is really special. And I think it just goes to show it's like he was ready to go, and a community kind of formed around him and carried him to now where he gets to be in a place where he can expand and grow. And I think, I mean, I know we felt this, like a lot of people lost their businesses during all this stuff. And the fact that, like, Bushwick, the people that are here supported everybody in this neighborhood was really something else.
Yeah.
It kept a lot of us going.
I would say, speaking to that community and Mahala at your boy, right? Mahala at your boy, the Helles Lager we're all drinking was a.
Is that the name of the beer?
Yeah. I know. Here it just says Innerborough times Roberta's Mahala at your boy, but it's called Mahala at your boy.
Is that a record or a rap song?
No. That was these guys.
I lived in Hawaii. So, like, we use the term mahalo pretty often around here, but for a while, you know, we have a marquee at Roberta's. I don't know if anyone's seen it. There's like a marquee up there. It always has like a funny saying.
There
on
is.
It. Yeah, it's now is in the tiki the bar. It used tiki to, bar? Oh, it okay, used okay. to be on the side of the garden on the rooftop oh, garden okay, up okay, right okay. here yeah. forever, and it always said crazy stuff. And for a long time, we just had one that said mahalo at your boy. And it was up there for a long time. It rode, like, we really, like, played that one out at the end. And, like, it was just a lot of things at Roberta's, it just becomes a thing. Everyone's just like, mahalo at your boy. Then everyone starts saying it to each other, you know? And it was perfect for this beer because it was for everybody.
Yeah. And so I would say, I don't know, it must have been summer of 2020, right? And when things were at their, like, absolute worst as far as, like, hospitality for us in New York City, sales and everybody, and you know, our brewery is we're a brewery and distillery, right? But in terms of beer, like we're sort of engineered to sell draft beer to local customers. That was sort of the whole business model. It was like, all right, we'll open, we'll make really good beer.
When I see Innerborough on tap in New York City,
yeah,
that's what I buy.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, yeah, and then that was what we
fresh.
Yeah, it was meant to be like, hey, we'll do this thing. We'll make this really good beer. We'll serve it. We'll self-distribute it locally. And we primarily were looking for draft accounts. And what happened when pandemic hit was that all the draft closed down, right? But then by that summer, it was beautiful out. And restaurants that were accounts of ours that had outdoor spaces were getting super busy because people wanted to get out of the house. And everybody learned that it wasn't on surface. And it was like, you know, we can be out there. You can get a glass of beer. It's not, you know. And we couldn't just sell package, right? You know, cans are like, they're everywhere. It's hard. You know what I mean? It's not the best way to present the beer, and it's not it's not a great way to put a beer like a Pilsner or a Helles into people's hands, right? You want beers that can be drank in pint glasses with thick heads of foam and enjoyed with food and friends around a table. And, Jason, who's the beverage director, came to us and we were just like, look, you guys got to be hurting, right? You can't have anybody inside. You got the outdoor space. You got a kegerator where you're letting people pour beers. And we were like, what's the beer that you need on those draft lines that you can get, you can sell the most of and give it to everybody? You know what I mean? That everybody will like. And let's figure out a way to like put that in a keg for you guys and make a cool, you know, because we've canned this beer like, I mean, maybe twice. And it's like short runs. This beer doesn't belong.
The original name for this beer was beer. It's wild. I know it's not very creative, but we were just like.
So, I mean, but for us, it was like.
It tastes like beer then, right?
Yeah. Building with Roberta's on this beer was part of us get and finding a way out of like the sort of like the pandemic blues, right? Where it's like, all right, we can, what we need to be doing is finding a product that we can like supply to our customers that they can supply to their customers. And because it was a lot of the niche stuff sort of disappeared, right? It was like middle of the pandemic, people just wanted to go out and they weren't going to go to like craft beer bars. The craft beer bars weren't open. It was like, they just wanted to go places where they could actually be around other people. So we wanted to make a beer that everybody could serve and everybody could drink. And in a way, this one's specifically for Roberta's, but our production of our lagers in general has just gone, you know, it's probably double what it was pre-pandemic.
And for us,
so IPA heavy, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And for us on our end, we it's like, we want something unique. Like we want to showcase what they can do, right? What the beer maker can do, but also we want something that's like unique to Roberta. So when you do these collaborations, it's great because it's like, one, we get something that's very unique to us, that's like imparted in our personality, and they get to help us like find that voice. And in the meantime, they also get to make an incredible beer that people love. And like we get to feel like communally we did something together. And I think like then you get buy-in from the people that work here who are selling the beer, because you have to remember all the wait staff, back waiters, bartenders, those people are selling stuff. If they can get behind something, they're gonna sell it better if they believe in it inside. And if it's part of like, if it's part of us, right, and it's mahalo at your boy and you're down with it, you're gonna sell it better.
So it's like,
and
it's the, good,
it works for everyone, because
yeah,
so this is like the next wave in craft beer. Is if more people want like the Budweiser or Modelo, you're making a better Helles lager.
I wouldn't say better. I just think we're making something here in the community and as a part of the community, right? And I think that
you can say better.
Well, it's I mean, I agree. Like the better is better. It's
not qualitative. It's communal. It's qualitative in the societal aspect of it, I would say. And the fact that, like, you know, the guys on my team who make this feel just as strongly about the quality of this beer, hopefully, as the people on your team who are giving it to the customers, because they can stand behind it. But I think it kind of speaks to what Shinobu was saying about being in this neighborhood and the support that, like, sort of, you know, the city, it got hard in the city. And I think people were like looking for ways to help each other out, whether it was business to business or consumer to business or people or person to person, you know?
But also knowing your like customer base, it's localized. We like Budweiser is a great beer for one reason. It was made for millions of people. This was a beer, again, that was made for this community. We thought about what do the people that come here want? And we tried to give them something like that we felt could fulfill their thing that they needed. And we did it right here. So it's more localized, and it was more about like just specifically what these people wanted here, versus Budweiser's look at a beer as was like, what is everybody in the whole
world.
Do they sell beer to like other galaxies?
Yeah,
maybe.
Exactly. Well, probably.
There's a high probability that they sell beer to other galaxies.
All right. Well, let's get weird for a second. Sake. I mean, yeah. Talking about just the beer that everyone
this
likes.
This is delicious.
Sake's Thank weird, you. Man.
Sake's weird. Well, sake is like a beer. You know, people has a kind of, you know.
But it's also kind of like a wine, right?
From the, you know, flavor and then also like a alcohol percentage perspective. And then, you know, I think like 20, 30 years ago when sake is introduced to the U.S., people call it rice wine.
Rice wine, right.
Right? But it's more rice beer. You know, our production is very similar to your production. And if you come to our brewery today, you probably pick up and then you can start working like tomorrow. It's very similar.
You got a second job, Jesse.
Sweet.
Actually, what it would take for him to learn how to brew sake, since he's already an accomplished brewer of beer?
It's like underlying science and process are exactly the same. So wine is completely different, but beer and the sake are like, you know, very close siblings. And it's just, you know, you use barley, we use rice. Basically, that's it.
Can I ask some blasphemous questions here? All right. What would happen if you like dry hopped sake? Like, could you, or even just over hopped sake?
I had some dry hop sake, and then I had some like beautifully dry hop sakes. Well, there's a like a historical and a scientific reason that you have to hop your beer.
Yeah.
Right.
The same
microbiological.
Thing that, right. Yeah. We don't have that reason to need to use hops because we control the pH initially. I'm going a little too geeky. Yeah. Lactic acid.
You acidify, right?
Yeah, before the fermentation.
Which the lactic acid is coming from the rice itself.
Traditionally, it was like a lacto-fermentation first.
Uh-huh.
So like a sourdough starter kind of process. And then lower the pH for the mash and then go to the main fermentation. But now I see, Jesse kind of,
Right.
So I think we're gonna see an Innerborough sake.
So. Yeah. Also, just like there are similarities of wine too. So, and in making spirits. So, and I think like we're probably moving closer to a gonzo world than any of us are ready to admit, right? Where people are starting to, people are making like nachos with like kimchi and like the worlds are coming together whether we like it or not. As a traditionalist, I have a hard time with some of this stuff, but I think at a certain point you just have to accept it. So at what point do you like,
as long as it's good?
Yeah, Shinobu, what would be the like sake beer hybrid, what would like at its most basic level?
So you, the Americans, invented that like long time ago, sake bomb.
You mean pouring sake into beer, right.
Yeah,
No, I mean if we started pre-fermentation.
No, but wait, this sake bomb, you guys were talking about that before.
Well, I was trying to get away from the sake bomb. I was saying at a certain age, like you don't put your alcohol in your other alcohol. You just keep them separate. My question was, what beer pairs well with sake?
What's the sake bomb? I only know about milkshakes now. So what's a sake bomb?
I've done that only once or twice.
Like a car bomb?
Where you actually drop it in?
What? You put the chopsticks on the pint glass and then put the small cup of sake and then you just, hit the table and then eventually you drop the shot into the beer. I think that's sake bomb, I guess.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, that's your culture. I don't know anything about sake bomb.
It's not my
culture. Did you say it was my college?
That was at college.
I went straight to beer bonging at like...
That was your high school, bro. That was high school. But so that's sake bomb. So beer, let's just get... We're taking a short break because we got to give a little advertisement about Roberta's to come on. But hey, we're taking a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant from French to Pan-Asian to American. And that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Hey, become a member and support us at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. We're back in the studio at Roberta's Pizza, and I keep touching my microphone because I haven't been in the studio hardly for 2 freaking years, and it feels so good to be here. We're drinking beer and sake together, and we're talking about beer and sake now with Brandon of Roberta's, Jesse of Innerborough, and Shinobu of Kato Sake. So you guys, when I walked in on you guys, you were already talking about
Brandon. I was going to say, I hope you guys enjoyed that Mahalo at Your Boy commercial that just played.
But beer and sake, like
guitar. Totally.
It's
guitar.
Like somebody was shredding. There was like one ukulele and just one dude shredding.
That was fun. But beer and sake, like, do people pair those two together? I always thought sake and beer, where you weren't supposed to drink together. I don't know.
I feel like there's a place. hey, we've had sake here for a long time. I feel like there's a place for sake in almost any bar. Like, one, for me, I always liked it because the way it makes me feel, I think it's a fun drunk, you know? Like, I love whiskey, but it kind of makes me mad. And like, the older I get, the more mad I get, you know? And it's like, I've never been like a scotch person or, you know, so it's like, I like clear grain, kind of pure alcohols, and something about sake, it's like, it gets you to that point where you want to have fun, but you're still like having fun and, you know,
not mad.
It's like, if I have like four shots of whiskey, like, you know, I might try to punch you. It's possible.
Say that for Zoom.
I would just be like,
when we do the video. But so like Japanese culture. So I know like Jesse's wearing a Beer Wax Queens t-shirt and Beer Wax, you know, inspired by Japanese record bars. But izakayas, like how do the sake, you said that in America, there's the wall of sushi bar. Like people drink sake at sushi bars. But what about like an izakaya or a Japanese pub? How do beer and sake like interact? Are they in the same establishment?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And we have a habit that we start drinking with beer all the time. You know, let's order beer anyway. You know, so we had a kanpai with beer and then move on to sake, I think.
Let's do kanpai.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kanpai to Bushwick.
Kanpai.
And Jesse and Brandon.
And Beer Sessions Radio, Jimmy.
Salute. And Roberta's Pizza.
But sake is more casual in Japan compared to, you know, the status of sake in the U.S. right now. So sake is kind of, you know, you need to know how to drink sake. I have many customers like, okay, I don't know anything about sake. I don't know, you have that kind of customers coming to your brewery.
But nothing's cordial in America anymore. People wear sweats on the airplane. So like, there's like nothing cordial. Like I see people drinking Moet out of the bottle or like a $100 glass of whiskey Coke.
But I do think there are beverages that, like we make Amaro, right? And we're like, hey, you know, this is our Amaro. And people are like, well, what's that? And then, and right away, it's like, there's a mystery. Like I was saying, I don't think that sake, perhaps, from my opinion, is completely demystified, right? And I think Amaro is kind of is another beverage that falls into that realm. And because people feel a little intimidated by it because they're like, they're like, what is it? And I'm like, well, it's an Italian bitter. And then it can either be an aperitif or a digestif, and the digestifs are a little stronger, and the aperitifs a little bit weaker. And then I'm like, wait, I'm losing these people. Yeah, by sentence two,
you know what I mean? They're like, thanks, professor.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, what the answer should be is, it tastes really good. You know what I mean? Like,
experience with our customers too. Yeah, so they want to know more about sake, but what we are telling you is, just drink more sake.
But how many years?
There's another quote: drink more sake.
But how many years? But how many years did it take for tequila? Right, like it took a long time too. Like, you know, it was like the only tequila that was getting like brought to America was pretty much garbage for a long time before Americans got a. You know, I mean, what's the Steely Dan song about Cuervo Gold? Right, just like that's what people think about. That's what people and I think that. That just goes to show how long it takes for something, a cultural thing, to like break that barrier. It doesn't happen right away. Amaro, digestives that are very popular today, you know?
Yeah, like, definitely, yeah.
I think like the Aperol Spritz probably, like, you know, and the kind of Fernet revolution that happened a few years back. Like those things help like bring it forward. There was a time where sake was like on the rise and then it just like kind of fell again.
Yeah.
And I think the makers of sake keep it mystified in a sense where like other people are more willing to exploit their product for big fat pockets and maybe like private jets. Where like maybe there's a moment here where they're just like, it is special to us and we're going to keep it special forever.
Right.
Well, that's true about everything. You know, say this, whether it's sake as a local drink, beer, a simple lager, a wine in wine country that might only be 9 or 10%, there's definitely like, you know, the international shipping and you know, branded products that do get top dollar. But for you as a you're the hospitality guy, and Brandon, I'm going to give you a shout out because Roberta's to me has been, other than places I've owned and worked in, I've spent more time here than anywhere else.
I know. We spend a lot of time together.
Yes. But you know, you always find that right, the hospitality touch. So whether it's putting sake or Amaro on the menu, tell us how you guys do that. Because you have a great, I want to end the show talking about beverage programs, because that's really where this all leads to, is now that the pandemic's over, these special, whether they're bars or restaurants or cafes that have the right touch with beverage programs. And that's how things take off, because, you know, Aperol, okay, we all know Aperol now. I don't need a wall of Amaro, and neither do I need a wall of Mezcal, neither do I need a wall of sake, but I'd like all those featured, and you do them.
Well, I think the approach for us is craftsmanship. And I think it's like, if you're a furniture maker and you look into the world, you can enjoy other furniture makers if they're doing, like, if they're craftsmen, if they're doing it in the same way that you're doing it. So if you're looking out at the world, whether it's Jesse, like anybody who's making a thing, if you're looking at them and you're watching them and you're saying, hey, this is a person that's approaching this with an amount of craftsmanship that I can respect, then you can find a way to, like, make it part of your what you do. And I think the difference is not like setting parameters or boundaries on what it is your restaurant should do. I'm an Italian restaurant. I only do Italian drinks. Like that's just not the philosophical view of Roberta's or anything we've ever done. We feel like we're a craftsman restaurant looking for other partners who are craftsmen. And if people are good at making something, we're going to look at that thing and see if there's a place for it for us. And if we can find that place, then we'll present it in the best way we possibly can to see if other people will be attracted to it. Yeah. And I think that that's, like, not a common way to run a business, but for us, it goes back to this communal mentality we were talking about before, which is like, I know this customer very well, and that's how they think. And like, that's how we've got so far, is that we all kind of think the same. So if they're thinking that way and I'm thinking that way, why can't I be like taking people who are doing great things right here in my neighborhood and present them here and see if it works?
Awesome. And I think that Bushwick is the perfect community for that, right?
It is.
Yeah.
There you go. Bushwick, bringing it back to Bushwick. I think what you need, when you talk about like what the history of the neighborhood is, and then you're like, you know, artists, right? Local community, which is super diverse, right? And then the artists who came in and sort of like created demand for like more hospitality. I think it's funny that, like, I would never, if anybody asked me like what's Roberta's, like, I would never say an Italian restaurant. You know what I mean?
I hope not.
You know what I mean? Like, it would never be the first thing that would come to mind. I'd be like, but then I'm like, it makes me think like, well, how would I just say
more street cuisine.
To me, I'm like, what's a pizza place that has farm to table stuff, or, you know what I mean? Something like that. That's like,
Jimmy, microphone.
But yeah, I mean, there is a world. I mean, and when Shinobu was talking about like a barrier for getting sake out there because it's like sushi places, you know, and there's definitely like, you know, and not to be like an asshole, but like when salespeople come back to me and they're like, well, I looked at this place, and, you know, and I'm like, well, that's an Irish bar. They're not going to carry our stuff. You know what I mean? Like, there becomes these like sort of like imposed barriers of like, well, are people who are open to stuff that is locally made and flavor forward that's not classifiable? And then there's like, well, you sort of shut yourself off at a certain, and probably not in a positive way, to like, oh, well, we can't even expect to be in there. You know what
Jesse,
I mean?
I'm going to jump ahead now, because you said you wanted to bring your
spirits. Oh yeah, I brought whiskey.
But because it's a different category. Like with beer, we get it. I'm so happy to have your beer on draft, and that's how I like to drink beer. You know, I'm so happy to be tasting sake and you know, at Roberta's, 8 or 10 years ago, they were pioneering Mezcal, Negronis and things. But for you, getting into spirits, you know, you always had a spirits license, but How is that working now? And
well, so we just celebrated our 6th anniversary, and in the middle of 2021, we bottled our first 4-year-old whiskey. And you know, talking about being a traditionalist, Brandon, like, you know, we sort of approached whiskey making from a pretty traditional point of view, where it was like, yeah, you want to open, what's it, this, you want to open the whiskey first, or you want to open the Amaro?
You're the boss.
I opened the Amaro. All right, well, first.
Let them try the Amaro.
And for glassware, I'm going to pour these next drinks into my water glass.
Yeah, yeah. So pour a tiny bit of that in there. So, you know, with the whiskey program, it was like, I wanted to make, we make single malt, we make straight malt whiskey. We don't make bourbon, we don't make rye, but I wanted to make something that would be very robust. And sort of would fit into what people think they think whiskey tastes like. You know what I mean? As a way to be like, the American palate for whiskey is, you know, as far as I can figure out, you know, bourbon more or less. And it's like, dominated by char and oak, you know what I mean? And sweetness, I suppose, right? Well, if you talk about corn. So I've made some straight malt whiskey that it's super easy to produce on a normal brew house operation, like a brewery operation that has a very robust flavor forward profile. The Amaro that you guys are all drinking now is like because I think Amaro sort of falls into like a Wild West kind of category where you can sort of just get away with almost anything as long as there's a little bit of sweetness and a lot of bitterness, right?
As long as you don't take it to Italy or France, like you should be
right, okay. Right. As long as we keep it here in America where there's no rules or laws, you know what I mean? And so this one is New York State apple brandy infused with grapefruit peel, blended with
I taste the grapefruit peel.
It's a grapefruit forward. And the grapefruit forwardness comes from me being a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale fan. You know what I mean?
It also has a little bit of nuttiness too, which I think is pithy.
There's also a lot of gentian, you know what I mean? And cinchona and a bunch of other bittering compounds. But yeah, it's sort of like
Wait, so stop. Jesse, Amaro's hip. I've seen places just turn their whole wall of liquor to Amaro and they sit there forever. What is it about your Amaro? And I'm with you guys. I would like to just sit and sip this as part of my meal, whether it's a digestive or an aperitivo. It doesn't matter. You get to know. The whole thing is with drinks is, you like he said, you have to get to know your sake. You have to get to know your drink. And that means we have to drink.
But you also have to get to know your body. So like for me, I think about these things in the line of like, how do I want to have the longest night of drinking, right? I start with the aperitivo, like I end with a digestivo, sake, you know, like they all find their way down your path. And you can't just like throw them all together. You know, your stomach is like the ultimate blender. Right, they're like putting it all together. So it's like if you know what your body likes best, you can like, you know, I could drink for 14 hours straight.
That's why I'm sleeping in tomorrow, right? Some of you listeners might say, wow, it's much more fun when we have the live in studio show. And it's true. You know, the whole heart of Beer Sessions Radio and Heritage Radio Network is the studio at Roberta's Pizza. So I just want to raise my glass and toast to these guys. But Amaro, this is cool.
I'm out of drinks.
It's Amaro and sake. You got to snap your fingers. You get a little.
I got this.
Oh, you got the Amaro. But Jesse, seriously, why did you guys pick Amaro? I love.
Oh, to I hear mean, the Amaro, processes. Man. For me, Amaro was. I just love the flavor. It was just a way to make something that I thought was like could be super unique and had. I mean, as a beer lover, like the citrus, the bitter citrus forward thing, like the minute I, you know, and when I got introduced to spirits as a maker, I was like, oh, this is like, you know, I sort of fell back to the flavor profiles that I understood the most. And I was like, oh, I can make, like, if I can do grapefruit, like that was, it was just sort of like,
how do you make Amaro? I mean, Are you distilling it or
no? So it's distillate that we make and then it's primarily infusions. You know, it's various infusions. You know, and then you know we do a distillation of New York State apple brandy. And now we're at the point where we make our own. We're buying apple juice, fermenting it, making our own cider, then distilling the cider down to apple brandy, then in order to make these infusions for the Amaro, just because that way we have the most control over the supply chain. And it was just a pain. Well, because initially I was like trying to buy cider off
people. Are you bringing apples into your distillery?
Yeah, and legally we can. Like you talk about like the gonzo world that we're all about to end up in. It's like New York State, it's 100% legal for me as a either farm brewer or farm distiller or either or both. You know, Jason Soller from Strong Rope could totally tell you exactly why it's legal for me, but he's told me why it's legal for me. So I'm 100% sure it's legal, but I can make cider.
Or like 99.
Yeah, 99.
You know, but he could have been full of shit. You don't know.
No, but Jason Soller knows everything about New York State alcohol beverage law. Yes, so yeah, cheers to him. He's having cheers to Strong Rope. But, so now we make our own cider and in order to distill it and, in order to make that product. And also we age apple brandy in barrels, just like we do our whiskey, so that we'll have some like super char and oak forward apple brandy for people in the future.
Which is very cool, because usually it's a nondescript spirit, like with a very little flavor that you're trying to impart, like bitter flavors, herbaceous bitter flavors. So when you're talking about Amaro, usually the basis.
Well, so the cool thing about apple brandy, right? Apple brandy has like all these fucking aromatic compounds that make fruit taste more like fruit.
Pectus.
Well, no, it's amyl acetate, and it's like these things that like that are actually used by double IPA drinker. But it's like actual compounds that are.
He's your best customer, and maybe he's behind the trends, but. Oh, yeah. I still go for double IPA.
Yeah.
So.
And they got a single, I think. So,
yeah. No,
Grimm's Weiss.
But wait, let's bring it back to. Okay. So, here, Tsunobu, you're listening to these hospitality, brewer, spirits guys, and you're making sake. You're making sake. It was this little place. I went there. I loved it because you were this little place. So, you made sake like almost like homebrew, right?
Yes, it's like I'm seeing your Roberta's like outside the patio space, and then our brewery is like as big as this space. Yeah, and you know, maybe Jesse's like,
but you as a maker, man, because Jesse's, you know, he's pumping it up. It's I want to go get some Amaro, and Brandon's like, I got to take some Amaro home. But for you, sake, let's sell us on sake, because I love your sake. I'm drinking it. It feels good.
Thank you.
How hard is it to make, the work involved?
You know, just a space limitation right now. Space and, you know, I'd love to do like, you know, infusion or other kind of interesting stuff, but we do not have enough tanks or enough space right now. And we are just catching up with the production. So although I'm kind of trying to sell more sake to Roberto's, if you know Brandon
I'm trying to buy more sake
back with like, okay, Shinobu, we need like 3 cases of sake, I have to say that I'm sorry, I only have 1 case of sake. Right now we are like, yeah.
So Brandon, okay, going back, I'm only going to Mezcal because I get to have some fun with this bolazol.com Mezcal and Pozole Festival. Now it's crazy, guys. I remember it was about 10 years ago, 8 years ago, you guys had the Mezcal Negroni. And now it seems common, but it really did, for me, put Mezcal on the map. How'd you guys come up with that? And then what would you do?
I think my answer is going to be the same here for every question you ask. Like when you start thinking about things that are made with craftsmanship, you just start looking at things and seeing how they fit. And when people come to you with great, well-made products, you're like, this is interesting. And once you see your establishment of having no borders, then you just look at things that are great and you say, do they have a place, and how can I make this fit into the things that I'm doing? And like, and then it opens up a world for you where you can just be like, anything's possible. I mean, we sold Sidra here. Nobody did that. We were early on sour beers. Like, we had sour beers for so long. Like, people would just be like, what is this shit? Like, why are you, this is not beer. People like did not understand it. Natural wine. We were so, we're sometimes too far in front of things where we're just like, I don't know, this is great.
But you're not.
That other people are just like, you guys are fucking idiots. This shit's gross. And then we have to like wait 10 years until
everybody's like, oh, I want that.
Yeah. And then you're just like, then we're bored with it and already on to, like, you know,
it's weird that this is still my go-to place, but I know I can get good food and drink here anytime. So great
thank
job,
you.
Man. Well, last thing, this whiskey, Jesse. You
So the whiskey.
I want to give you, this is my intro chance. Jesse said today, he said, you know what? I'm coming, but I'm bringing spirits. So you're really proud of this, and it's good. So tell us why it's good. This is pretty cool.
So, I mean, this is our second bottling of our Black Label whiskey, which is aged 3 years in first use American oak and then finished in 1 year in an ex-bourbon barrel. And, you know, it's just it's a straight malt whiskey. It's 100% malt. It's something that we make on our system, just like we would make beer, in terms of process. But it's got, I feel like a really, you know, sort of, on one hand, very like recognizable, robust, you know, sort of oak and char kind of flavor. But on the other hand, it's got a similar, you know, sort of a dry character.
And how do you sell it? Like, is it wholesale? Is it retail?
We sell it mostly at the brewery, and then we sell it to accounts. I mean, you know, we're trying to sell it to accounts. The sort of challenge with spirits is that it's in terms of like mega companies and mega corporations, it's highly dominated by, you know, big companies. And so getting off premise is sort of determined by getting off premise is determined by getting on premise. And, you know, we launched this, you know, a year into the pandemic when like sort of the craft the sort of specialty bars were all closed. I mean, of all the bars that got hit the hardest, the like, you know, super, super boutique cocktail places got hit really hard because the aesthetic for those places was like, the speakeasy, the place with like 8 seats, you know what I mean?
Also, everything got pushed outside, which anytime you're talking about an outside bar, you're talking about spirits like tequila and rum as being your highest sell. Like as a hospitality person, once you get outside.
Yeah, nobody's really looking for an old fashioned to drink on the sidewalk.
No,
you know what I mean?
No, they're not trying to sit out in the sun drinking like old fashions or sidecars. Like the bourbon drinks start to go away and you start to really see a lot more vodka, tequila, you know, rum type of drinks. So as the pandemic hit, those bourbon bars are usually small, tight, packed in. Those are the ones that are really probably the most impacted. So, you know, and then you got to compete against all the big dogs. Like bourbon's it's a hard space to really like navigate because people got lots of money. There's a lot of money in it, man. Well, they'll make you.
There's
they'll
branding,
make you
and there's like there's a status part of it, you know.
Yeah.
But hey, last thing. So Brandon, when I walked in, besides you're always so great, and it's
this
no
is
wonder
good.
That
this is delicious.
Everything you do still feels fresh to me, man. I want you to know that, Brandon at Roberta's. And I walked in, and already you were talking to Shinobu about what beer should I pair with your sake. But you're also talking about, wow, when I really sit at the bar, if I'm going to have a beer, I want to drink it. How do you want to drink your beer with a whiskey?
Oh, I mean, well, personally, if you ever see me at the bar, I usually have like 5 or 6 different drinks in front of me. And I'm just like very, very, even you've seen me, Jimmy, you do it too. We drink the small beer, right? We have the smallest cup so we can have many small cups of beer. And then we pretend like we don't drink a lot, but we have like 20 of those small cups. And then also I usually have like 4 or 5 other cocktails or small spirits.
You know, we need to define that. We need to call that industry style because.
That was me and Augie Carton's secret all the time. We would have events in New Jersey and we would come with our own 4-ounce glasses so that we could be like, I'm drinking out of this. And then you can like, you can, over the course of a night, drink the same amount of beer.
More.
Yeah, exactly. More.
I promise you. I'm the master of this. You can drink four.
But yeah,
it's cold.
It's how you can, it's how you can survive.
And fresh.
You
know what I mean? Like, and, but also like, more importantly for me, it's like a way for me to also be trying things and understanding. And like, I'm always going through the process. Was this and this good?
Well, yeah. So, and also
good?
Like
when I'm drinking things together, I feel good? Did I like this? Were these good together? And then tomorrow I'm going to wake up and be like, that was bad. Or I'll be like, that was good.
Yeah.
You know,
but also like as a beer drinker, you know, now probably, but also 10 years ago, for sure, you'd go places and they had 20 taps. You want to try everything. You know what I mean?
Not everything.
Well, not everything, but still.
I hear you, because there's times where I'm just like, God, this beer list is fucking good.
Yeah, and you're like,
I want to roll through this.
I remember being in places in California where I had never been and being like, I got to try every single beer on that list. And it felt like a mission, and it's still drinking. So you're like, so small glass is definitely important.
So did you...
Like a sake glass.
I mean, sometimes.
Shinova. We're going to close out with Shinova because he's our upstart little guy in Bushwick, Kato Sake. Your new place is opening up. Is it open yet?
No. It's empty.
And where's
it going to be? Where's it going
to
be?
Is there
next to KCBC. Yeah,
tap
awesome.
Sake. What is it? I walk in there, what? I'm going to stand there and...
We'll have a proper tap room.
And yeah. Is there Japanese food or what?
No, I think somebody will take care of the food, not us.
And First of all, you don't need food to drink.
No, but we have to hear this. Last thing, Shinova, for you.
Sake is made of rice.
Let's just demystify one thing.
But I want to hear the vision. So your vision of this slightly larger sake room, what is it? I walk in, what happens?
It will be exactly what you experienced when you came to our old space. In a kind of real size. Yeah. So we'll have a bar counter, you know, tap room. You can come in and then drink sake. We might have a pop-up, something like that. Or you can bring pizza from Lobelitas, of course. Yeah.
So the sake is something to drink. Mm-hmm. You can drink it there or take it to go to.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
That's great.
Exactly.
So this is going to be the sake center of Bushwick. We got the sake king of Bushwick. The beer and spirits king of Bushwick Jesse.
Cheers.
And the hospitality and pizza king of Bushwick. Uh-oh. This has been a great show, guys. We're not done. We're going to hang out for a while. Whiskey now on the menu at Interborough too, bro. And Brandon, once again, thank you, man, for giving us your perspective, because keep it fresh and I'm happy to be out here.
You're so full of shit.
I know. I love you, though. So, hey, everybody, we got Matt Patterson on the engineer today. Our producing interns, Alex Trump. Oh, Dylan Hoyer, our longtime producer, is here in the studio as well.
Whoa.
This is a party at Roberta's Pizza. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. Tune in to heritageradionetwork.org. All right. Woo. Thank you. Thank you.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.